Good Thursday afternoon and welcome to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is John Slaughter with the 96 National Historical Site. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here, and we are here with John Slaughter, who is the superintendent of not only 96, but also of CalPENS. Kind of sounds like that's a consolidated title. Does that have to do with budgeting issues?
No, it's really more about the similarity in the sites. You know, the stories are the same, and the resources are the same, and the visitor
sounds
base.
Like, yeah. Sounds like budgets. Does sound like budget, even though they coordinate real, real well. But, John, you are not an original South Carolinian, are you?
How could you tell? Was it my accent?
It gave it away.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You need to do what I did, learn to throw in a few y'alls.
Y'alls, yeah, okay. A couple of y'alls. Yeah. All right. I'm actually from California. You know, I know people kind of look at me.
California.
Yeah, I know.
That's all the way across there.
Hey, at least I got out, right?
You did get out. But did you grow up in California?
I did. I was born in California. I'm first generation. My family's from the Midwest, Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Arkansas.
Did they take a wagon out there?
Yeah, it was a wagon. Yeah. It was a Ford wagon.
Ford wagon. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking, you know, of the wagon
train.
Train.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Yeah. But so you ended up in California. Now, you grew up there. And what did you want to be as you were growing up? This is always one of my fascinating questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was pretty sure I was going to be a professional baseball player when I was growing up. Yeah, that was my goal.
That was your goal.
My life's ambition.
Yeah.
I hadn't really planned on doing much more than that until about my senior year in high school.
Where you looked at things and said...
Yeah, maybe not so. Maybe that's pretty reaching for the stars.
So what did you decide to do?
Well, I went into the military, went into the United States Army, and
reached for some other stars.
I did, yeah. And when I got out of the Army, I went into construction engineering.
Okay, and you went to school?
I went to school in the San Joaquin Valley in California. And when I was done with school, I got into refrigeration engineering, mostly industrial refrigeration.
Okay. And was there a big calling for that?
Yeah, at the time, yeah. And there still is, really. It's kind of a specialized engineering field when you talk about ammonia refrigeration and large-scale refrigeration systems, yeah.
But you have an interesting story, because where did you end up after that?
Yeah, I realized, back to budget, I guess, personal finances, I realized that, you know, having my own business or working for others was, in any kind of construction industry, even back then, was really touch and go. And I saw an opportunity to go to work for the federal government at China Lake Naval Weapons Center, and that's in the middle of the desert in California.
Why don't you tell me, that's the largest naval base?
In the nation, yeah.
In the nation.
Yeah.
In a desert, and we're talking the Navy, folks.
Right.
That seems a little weird, doesn't it?
It does, but when you're testing, you know, the most significant and newly developed weapon systems for air-to-ground and air-to-air combat, you need a lot of space to do that, and so, yeah.
And what exactly did you do there?
Well, I was...
Secret stuff.
Yeah. I was managing some facilities at some of the research facilities on the base.
And you were to keep them cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, keep them cool.
Make sure we kept people cool and, yeah, calm and collected.
Like,
right?
Yeah. But so then if you were doing that, then how did you end up in the forestry department here?
Oh, forestry department. You know, that's people are... Bless the Forest Service.
Yes.
The Department of Agriculture. National Park Service is actually under the Department of the Interior.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a common mistake. Most people, I think, when they see the uniform, they equate us with the Forest Service. Two different missions.
Two different missions. Okay.
Just to clarify. I'm sorry.
I don't mean to be rude. Great.
You know, back in the 90s, Congress had determined that the base realignment and closures bill was going to pass, and we were looking at a number of different efficiencies in the military at bases. And the base that I was at was going through the process of reviewing whether some of the functions were going to stay government or whether they were going to be contracted out. And there was a good possibility that what I was doing was going to be contracted out. So rather than take the chance to go to work for a contractor, I really enjoyed working for the federal government. And I did.
You know, everybody wants a government job. Now.
Yeah, you know,
we talk about this a lot.
It really is. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit more, too, about some
okay.
of the opportunities that might be coming down the pipe. You know, it really is kind of a recession-resistant position and job to have. And I recognize that and realize that. And there was a great new national park starting just, you know, not even an hour and a half from where I was living at the time. And I thought, wow, I'd really like to help build that park.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Manzanar National Historic Site.
And what happened at Manzanar?
Yeah, Manzanar's one of these crazy stories. You think of national parks and you think of Yosemite and Yellowstone and Glacier and Grand Tetons and these great natural wonders. But so many of our parks nowadays are really cultural parks. And Manzanar was the site of the first World War II Japanese internment center.
Wow,
where,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, where we as a nation incarcerated throughout the country about 110,000 Japanese Americans.
So what's there at the park?
Well, at the park, there's some remnants of the camp,
mm-hmm.
the detention camp there, and a road system and a few of the buildings and a few of the structures and a visitor center that we got to build that was it's actually an adaptive reconstruction of one of the existing historic buildings, the auditorium.
So it's really just a place people can come and see where they were put during this time. But it's also, I guess, because of the large amount of property that they had there, they decided to make it into this historic site as a park.
Yeah, and, you know, that's kind of an interesting process because most historic sites aren't really all that big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 96 is just right at about 1,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a huge amount. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but it's not a huge amount. When you think of Joshua Tree, the last park I was at was nearly 900,000 acres. That particular site is a little site. It's just under 800 acres at Manzanar. It tells a significant story, and the National Park Service is really about providing the opportunity for people to come learn about their history in America and take away from it what they need. You know, we try not to lean one way or the other, but try to give the facts and let people walk away from it with what they
need. Oh, I love it. Just the facts, please, ma'am.
Just the facts, ma'am. That's right.
All right. Well, we are here with John Slaughter. We are going to be talking more with him. Before we hear a word from our sponsors now, you were at Joshua Tree. Now, tell me a little bit about Joshua Tree.
Joshua Tree National Park's a very large national park in California and near Palm Springs in the southern part of California.
God, I feel for you, John. I mean, you know, you've had a tough time here with these park systems.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, coming here was great.
Coming here was great. Well, we want to talk more about that. Hey, you were telling me, though, out there in Joshua Tree, you never pulled out your lawnmower?
Yeah, I had a lawnmower. I just sold it yesterday.
You sold it yesterday?
Yeah, because I had to buy a real lawnmower, a bigger lawnmower. Yeah, and in 5 years, I never had to start my lawnmower in Joshua Tree.
Never had to start your lawnmower. Okay, and he was out there at Palm Springs. God, we feel for you, John. We feel for you. Hey, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We're going to be talking with John Slaughter, who is the superintendent of Cowpens and of 96 National Historic Site. If you've got a question for John, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
This year will be a simpler year, one fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is John Slaughter, superintendent of the 96 National Historic Site. And now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here. And, of course, John is not only over 96, but also over Cowpens. Now, you ended up coming from Joshua Tree out there in Palm Springs. What made you want to leave Palm Springs for South Carolina?
Well, and work. One of the great things about the Park Service is the opportunity that to get to spend your career in some of the most amazing places that this country's found significant. And it was the time for me to change. I wanted to grow in my position, and I've been wanting to get out of California for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We
here in South Carolina understand that.
Okay. South Carolina, you know, the history with the state and the people, it was a natural draw. It was an opportunity. It came my way, and I jumped on it. I said, you bet. I want to go to South Carolina, but I wanted to make sure my family had an opportunity to come experience the state and experience the culture and the people and the history.
Had you ever been to South Carolina before?
I had. I had a couple of times, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so first you were with Cowpens, right? And then did they add 96, or were they both at the same time?
No, I knew I was getting both parks, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's the way it's been for a while. Both of the parks are relatively new when you look at national parks within the last 40 years. And I guess it was about 25 years ago that both parks were combined.
Mm-hmm.
And so that traveling back and forth, 90 miles is basically the difference between the two.
And where do you actually live?
I actually live in Inman.
Inman?
Yeah.
And in between the two there.
Yeah, a little bit. But my first 2 months I lived in Greenwood. Actually, mm-hmm. just outside of Greenwood. I lived on Lake Greenwood.
Yeah, yes.
But so I was told I lived in Waterloo, and when I told people I lived in Waterloo, they said, "Where?"
So Lake Greenwood. Well, that's great. So, how is your family adjusted to living here?
Oh, doing well. Yeah, it's a challenge, like I said, we love it, and I think, you know, it would probably be tougher if it wasn't so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be tougher if the people weren't just as genuinely nice as they are, and
is it,
I think,
different from California?
as you roll your eyes,
right?
Right. Certainly. Yeah. The genuine kindness of people in South Carolina, and especially Greenwood County and Spartanburg County, is just it's amazing. I feel blessed that we had the opportunity to come.
Well. So now, as far as the parks are concerned, the National Historic Site in Cowpens and 96, you just a couple of weeks ago had the Candlelight Walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a big event right here in Greenwood.
Yeah. It's actually, I didn't realize it until after this, and I started looking at the numbers. It's actually the largest event at the park.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
it was, what, the 30th?
It was the 7th.
7th,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and it was, it was the 7th.
Okay.
And it was a great event. I mean, the people, just the different individuals that came out and the kids, oh, my goodness, you know, seeing the kids out there is so great, you know, letting them have an opportunity to experience the park. And we use reenactors and living historians during that event, and it really brings it to life. It brings the history, the 18th century history of the site to life, and really makes it relevant to the youth and even to the local residents that may not have experienced. I would say that event, there were probably about 50% of the people had never been to that event before.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the things about, sometimes when you have something in your backyard, you don't realize how lucky you are. You know, the grass is always greener over the septic tank, right?
Right.
That's the deal. You have to go out of town when we have something like 96 right in our backyard.
Yeah, and it is an amazing resource, a historical resource. We're doing a lot of outreach to the local communities, and we're going to be doing more. You're going to see me out in the community a lot more, and you're going to see me at a lot more events for that reason. You know, I want Greenwood to know that this is their national park. I mean, there's only 395 national parks across the entire country. That makes this site pretty significant when you think about all the places that could be that aren't.
Yeah.
And here you are, you know, with this amazing site with some of the most significant Revolutionary War resources in the nation within 15 minutes.
Absolutely. In fact, you were talking about before the show about the number of battles and clashes that took place during the Civil War. That's some of the greatest numbers.
Well, yeah, actually the Revolutionary War.
But
that's okay, because I made the exact same mistakes 100 times before I ever came out here, and I didn't realize when I was asked to research and learn a little bit about 96 and Cowpens, I fully expected that I was going to be learning about the Civil War. And what I didn't realize is I was going to be learning about the first Civil War, which was really the war between the Loyalists and the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly.
More battles were fought here in South Carolina. Skirmishes and battles were fought here in South Carolina than anywhere else in the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely. You know, a couple of years ago, I actually went out there during when we were having some of those reenactor days and talked to the doctor that was out there and all the different ones. One of the guys telling stories. And my favorite, though, was the Indian guy who looked at me and said, "What, you white woman, you don't understand?" He stayed in character the whole time while I was talking to him. It was great.
Yeah, yeah, and it really is. You know, it's an art and it's a craft that, you know, for centuries, not only this country, but the world's been using the art and the craft of reenactors.
Storytellers, really.
To perpetuate the history, yeah, exactly, yeah. To really kind of carry on that story.
And that makes it so much more relevant to people, because when they see it being reenacted, it's much better than sitting there reading a book, I think.
It has a greater impact, I think, in a lot of cases. The downside of that is that it's hard to recruit and keep that going.
Sure.
You know, and so that's something you're going to be seeing us doing, taking an active role at 96 and at Cowpens, to increase the cadre of younger folks that can do reenacting and living history.
Well, reenactors are amazing to me. I mean, they spare no expense when it comes to getting original fabric or original buttons and, you know, all this type of stuff, and that can get very expensive.
It can, and it really is a market that is a niche market. But even beyond the accoutrements and the vestments is the history that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing the person that you're portraying, becoming the person that you're portraying, and the historical research that many of these living historians and reenactors put into the person that they're portraying. Most of them don't pick a genre of people. They pick a specific person, and they learn about that person.
Well, if we were talking about Lady Gaga, we'd be talking about channeling a person.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah.
Becoming
could,
that person, channeling
be, yeah,
that person.
Could
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Could be. All right.
Exactly.
All right.
So, but it, the things that are done out there, anything I've attended has always been top-notch. And that's a testament to the people that work there.
Absolutely.
And the volunteers that you have
yeah.
that come together to help with these programs.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned budget earlier, and I know, it's really a hot topic, federal budget, and you know, being a federal agency that falls under that discretionary spending, it's always a challenge to ensure that the services that we're providing are really giving the taxpayer, you know, the best bang for their buck. And I think if you were out there at the Candlelight Tour, you got an example of there is no better way to spend your tax dollars than to invest them in the National Park Service. We have 4 full-time employees at 96. And they are an amazing group of individuals, I'll tell you. And I've never met any more dedicated employees than those that are there now. But an event like the Candlelight Tour, there's no way you can put that event on with 4 people.
No.
We had over 70 volunteers. So, you know, we talk about the financial investment, but there's also that commitment, you know, to ensuring that your national park is able to provide those types of quality events. And the only way we can do that is to maintain that volunteer cadre. So, if you're interested,
yes.
give us a holler, and we're always, always willing to find some place to put you.
And what would be a number to call if someone was interested?
Well, if they want to call the park number is 864-543-4068. And they can ask for me, or better yet, ask for our volunteer coordinator, who's the chief ranger down there, and that's Tim Cruz.
We've had Tim on.
Yeah, yes. Tim's a great guy.
Absolutely.
And if you don't get a hold of him, then you'll probably get a hold of Sarah Cunningham, and she's another great resource. And if you not the type that wants to call and you just want to tap somebody on the shoulder, then grab a hold of Gray Wood. He's been there forever, or George McCarty. Any one of those will point you in the right direction. They're all great employees, very, very committed to the site.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's hear a word from our sponsors. We're also going to hear South Carolina news, so don't you go away. We'll be right back.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Monday, happy day.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is John Slaughter, superintendent of the 96th National Historic Site. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back with John, and we do need to mention he's also the superintendent of Cowpens National Battlefield and 96th National Historic Site. So we were just talking about the event coming up, a backcountry holiday on December 3rd, and you were just getting ready while we were waiting to come back on the air about the Herbert Hoover, the big event that happens out there. Tell us a little bit about that and how the Christmas tree you were just getting ready to tell me. I mean,
well, we were talking, to put it in context, we were talking about the difference between how the Christmas holiday may have been celebrated in the 18th century versus how it's celebrated in the 20th century.
It's going back, folks. I feel it, but go ahead.
And one of the sites that I was previously at that I did a detail as superintendent was Herbert Hoover National Historic Site in West Branch, Iowa. And a big event for a Christmas pass where it was an all-night and all-day event the next day with hay rides and caroling and a big Christmas tree lighting ceremony in the park. And at 96, I was just talking with the staff there, and I said, so what do we do about a Christmas tree here? Oh, there's no Christmas tree. I said, what? No Christmas tree? And I was reminded that research has been done by, our park staff that, at the time, would there have been a Christmas tree? Historically, would have been historically accurate to have a Christmas tree? And it's pretty well documented that wasn't standard.
You did not have a Christmas tree?
Yeah, standard Christmas accoutrements in the 18th century.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there'll be no Christmas tree?
I'm not going to say that.
Thought I had a scoop here today. He's not going to say that. Okay, so this event coming up, a backcountry holiday, December 3rd. Now, what exactly will this all be about?
Well, we're hoping that the past will come to life for you as you walk into the Black Swan Tavern, and into 18th century holiday, and where we're going to have interpreters, living historians, and reenactors demonstrating what backcountry life would have been like in the 1700s, especially during the holidays, and that.
Will there be any Christmas cheer then?
Oh, you bet! There's going to be all sorts, I'm sure there will be some singing, and there will certainly be different types of arts and crafts, and probably some beverages that would be reminiscent of that time. Yeah.
So this will be another great event, and I guess we'll have the smells of Christmas too. I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. The smells, and to me, it's the whole ambiance of Christmas.
Exactly.
Christmas is such an amazing holiday. To be able to feel that sense of what it's really all about, and how significant it would have been in the 18th century. With this whole, the whole movement towards freedom and why it was, and the freedom of to express religion in the way that you needed to express it. So there's other significance to an event like this as well. It really is an opportunity for us to re-celebrate our freedom.
Yes, And when you're talking about freedom and you're talking about that, what do you think was the most significant thing that happened at 96? What's the most significant? I mean, there were lots of things that happened. What was the most significant?
Well, I think the most, you can look at this on a micro basis or you can look at it from a larger basis. And I think the greatest significance was that it was really a battle between, it was the first Civil War. It was a battle between Americans. It was a battle between Americans that were loyal to the king, and it was a battle between them and those that that were trying to break away from what they considered the tyranny and the oppression. And it was brother against brother, cousin against cousin, and that I think that's one of the greatest significance of the site. The battle is significant in the the history books as the longest siege during the Revolutionary War. The site itself is extremely significant in that the resources, the Star Fort itself and Kosciuszko's mine that's there are two historic features that are found nowhere else in the country. And so
that's huge.
And it really contributes again to the significance of this being one of 395 places across the country that that are deemed significant enough to be called part of the national park system.
Well, you know, we talk about this, that significance in everything, and of course, you know, as we look at the budget and what we have going with the budget, and I know back in, July, June, that they were talking about what we were going to do, and it almost came to a shutdown. Mm-hmm. There was even discussion of having to shut down some of the parks.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any talk about the park system and, you know, can we afford 395 parks and what would happen?
Well, the great thing about the park service and the park system is it's easy to get bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. You know, parks are in every district, every congressional district. They're in you know, every state with the exception of one, and they are.
What state doesn't have a park?
I'm pretty sure it's Rhode Island.
Rhode Island?
Yeah.
Well, they're in trouble then. No.
I may be wrong.
Okay.
I may be wrong. It might be Connecticut. I'm pretty sure it's Rhode Island, but. In any case, you know, it's always a challenge. You know, that's one of the challenges of working for the federal agency is that every year you really have to kind of be on your toes about how to manage your dollars the best that you can. We have confidence in the Park Service. We have great leadership in the Park Service, and our leadership really reaches across the aisles to because this is the American people's kind of backyard. These are the things that the American public, almost every single national park has been brought to Congress, you know, by the people that want to preserve it in the nation. So it really is. It's a movement that kind of transcends some of the budget talks. And we're always confident. I'm always confident that Congress and the administration see the value of the National Park Service to the people and continue to fund us in a way that we can continue to operate.
Well, I understand. I just, you know, when you start looking at what needs to be done and what doesn't, is this something that in the end, so you're telling me in the end you believe that even if it was up there that they would pull back and support it?
I think that it's easy to support national parks. That's really what it comes down to. It's easy to see the value of the dollar spent in a national park.
Is there ever any talk, though, about, I know during one time of our history, didn't they actually close the parks for 2 weeks here and 2 weeks there just to help reduce some of the costs?
No, there was a government shutdown in the 90s, and when we have a government shutdown, government shuts down, and
right.
The Park Service is part of that, and we did have to close our gates at that time.
Okay.
And we would have we were poised to do so. There was a lot of planning that went into it. How are we going to do this and still take care of these resources?
Sure, because, you know, I think there's been some talk about even if you had to close a couple of weeks out of every year, I mean, would that be something that, do you think that would be something that would be plausible if that ever came to it for the parks? just to reduce the cost of labor and all the other things if they had to close this park here for 2 weeks and that one here and divided it up, because there was talk about that at one point.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a lot tougher conversation than just answering that question, because there's a lot that goes into it. Being a federal agency, there's certain mandates that are associated with how we operate.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the government has mandates on how they do things.
And regulations and environmental regulations and cultural resource regulations. And so, you know, it becomes, it just like any other government agency, it becomes kind of tricky, you know. Do I think we could do it? I always think there's ways to be more efficient and get the biggest bang for your buck. I think we are at a point, as a number of agencies are, but especially in the Park Service, of doing the best that we have with what we have, and recognizing that you can't do more with less. You're going to eventually do less with less. And so what does that mean? How do you evaluate what that is that you're not going to do anymore? And each park is different. Each
sure.
park has a different set of protections and a different set of resources that they are preserving. So, yeah, it's kind of, and that's why we have individual superintendents help make those decisions.
Sure.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to volunteer out there at the park, they certainly could use your help. I guess I could say that, right?
You betcha. We love volunteers, and we think there's no better way for the local communities to get involved and get behind their national park.
Absolutely. So you can give them a call out there, 543-4065. That's 543-4065. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. Hey, if you've got a question for John, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy day.
You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is John Slaughter, superintendent of the 96 and Cowpens National Historic Sites. And now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We're back here with John Slaughter. We were just talking about why are the national parks important? You know, what makes them so important?
Well, it's really the relevancy, you know. It's always a great question. Why is it important to preserve 96? Why is it important to preserve cowpens? Why is it important to preserve these historic resources like?
I mean, it was in the past, John. What do we need to know about it? Jeez.
Right.
And as our kids grow up and everything, sometimes I think it's hard for them to understand the importance of the past.
It really is.
I think as you get older, you get more of an appreciation of it. But when you're young, sometimes you don't really see it.
Well, and especially in sites like these, you know, in sites like these, on a national level, if you think about it, and it's very obvious to me coming from the West, you don't realize that the Revolutionary War was won in South Carolina. I mean, they don't teach that in history books.
Right.
You know, the Revolutionary War, you read about it, it's, you know, it's Pennsylvania, it's New York, it's Virginia, it's all in the North.
Right.
But the reality is, and I'm becoming more and more entrenched in this belief as I learn more, is that it was won in the South. That's what makes it relevant. It makes it relevant because you tell the whole story. How did that happen? Like Paul Harvey used to say, telling the rest of the story.
Right.
And so that's our goal. That's our mission, really. Now is making that turn in the 21st century to reach out to all segments of the population and make these sites relevant to them.
I know you were telling me that the national parks are actually an education, an extension of the educational system.
Really, we are. You know, we've always been an education based agency, but. Really in the sciences and preservation before, and now it's more, I'm going to say it again, that word relevancy. It's more about relevancy and education and reaching out and getting out there and making making a site like 96 relevant to today's school children. How do you do that? You can't just do it by only doing reenactment. You got to be able to provide the electronic programs, the podcasts, and
sure,
developing the Facebook pages and those sorts of tools and technologies. And so, you know, we've really become an extension of the education system the National Park Service has, and we recognize that. And we recognize how important we are as a tool to educators to really assist them in making our country as great as it can be.
Now, the relationship between CalPENS and 96.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about CalPENS. We haven't really talked about that much.
Yeah. No, CalPENS is a great site. Again, we talk about significance, probably the turning point, although arguably, I guess, at Kings Mountain they might say it was the turning point. But really, kind of the turning point of the Revolutionary War in the South, you know, where Tarleton's elite forces, his Green Beret, his SEAL Team 6, was really decimated by patriots and Daniel Morgan and what he was able to accomplish. And so it's a significant site, and it's interwoven with 96, in that Tarleton really thought he was going to fight Morgan at 96, because 96 was that western outpost so significant to the British, and it didn't, and he chased them all the way up to CalPENS to do battle. And then the Battle of Kings Mountain. Kings Mountain, another national park in South Carolina, that's just, we just celebrated the battle there, which was a significant victory for the Over Mountain victory, the Over Mountain men, and what they were able to accomplish in their defeat of Ferguson at Kings Mountain, which really started the wave of we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not this. It's not all lost. We can do this. We still have some fight left in us. And so each one of these sites are interdependent on each other, and that's my goal, is to make them the type of site that you can't go to one without needing to go to the other when you're done. And that also goes for some significant sites in the area, like Musgrove Mill and Walnut Grove and Camden. You know, these are all sites that maybe aren't part of the National Park Service,
right,
but they're significant to the same stories we tell.
Well, you know, you should get out there and see all of them. If you can only go to one, though, because you can only want to travel so far, 96 would be where to start, right?
96 is a great site. I love it. It's beautiful. The staff is great. Very intimate little site.
And it costs how much to go there?
Oh, it's pretty expensive.
Really?
We've doubled the cost since last year, yeah.
Did you?
So I think
the price I knew was going up.
Yeah, I think double of free is free.
Free,
yeah.
Okay. So it's free to go to the park. And
right.
When is the park open?
The park is open 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
362 days a year. We're closed Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. And we're open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
So plenty of time to get out there. And it's free. And do you charge for parking then? You must be charging for parking.
We don't charge for parking.
No charge for parking either.
How about that? Yeah.
So,
and we have an awesome video. We have a brand new movie that kind of tells the story of 96, and it's narrated by Trace Adkins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, no expenses spared, I guess, in the making of that. And it's a wonderful award-winning movie that has become a great educational tool as well.
Now, do you also do, I know you do this, school kids can come out there as groups? I mean, they bring them out there?
Yeah, and I encourage that. We're going to be reaching out. We're doing a great job of getting schools out there. We're also going to be getting out into the schools. Sarah Cunningham, one of our rangers, has been doing a great job of getting out into the school system, and we're going to continue to do more of that. And so if you're interested in having us come out, or you're interested in coming out as a teacher, especially in the fourth grade or the eighth grade, since that's where the curriculum falls for the Revolutionary War, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Contact us. Let us know you want to come out, and we'll facilitate a group.
Absolutely. And that number again, 543-4065. That's 543-4065. Coming up, the next event is on December 3rd. It's a backcountry holiday, Hey, you got anything going on for Halloween?
Ooh. Yeah, well, we'll always have a little bit of protection. Gets a little spooky out there at Halloween, and people think they can do crazy things, but yeah.
It's okay. Nothing specific going on. They are going to be having a great weekend in 96, though, with all the
ghost
Halloween.
Walk.
Yeah, the ghost
yeah.
walk and everything.
Yeah.
That's why I wondered, is the national park on the ghost walk?
No, but we will probably have some sort of presence there, whether it's living or not.
Living or not. Okay. All right. Well, listen, what else would you like to tell us about what you're doing and how it all coordinates, or what else would you like to talk about?
Well, if you want to get another good opportunity for a great event, is an event coming up at Cowpens. January 17th is the anniversary it'll be the 231st anniversary of the battle at Cowpens. And we usually have about 100 reenactors out there.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's a pretty significant event. And also, if you're interested in getting into reenacting becoming a living historian, this is a great time to do it. Because I'll tell you...
How does somebody get involved in that, John?
Well, what I'm realizing here in South Carolina is there is a lot of groups doing this.
Yeah.
And whether you want to get involved with Revolutionary War reenacting or Civil War reenacting or War of 1812, get a hold of your local group, whoever your local group is, and find maybe your local national park
mm-hmm.
or even one of your state parks, state historical parks. Find out who that group is and give them a call. They're always willing to train and bring on new people. It's such a great family environment. Great atmosphere to be around, and you know, you really get to learn some cool things.
Well, I know Eric Williams. He, of course, was the former park ranger out there,
right.
And of course, now he's into, I think he's doing the medical end of reenactments, isn't he?
Eric is a jack of all trades when it comes to reenactors. That guy is an asset to this community, and he's an asset to the reenactment community.
Sure.
He travels all over the East Coast going to these events, and he's a great resource for us. And I'll tell you, he's got a wealth of knowledge, and we're proud and happy that Eric continues to want to be a part of 96 National Historic Site. Him and his wife. His
yeah.
wife is wonderful too, Jan.
That's right. They are. And so I just wanted to mention them. So you are ready to expand what's going on at 96, and of course up the road in Cowpens there. If you want more information, give John a call. You can call him right there, 543-4065. That's 543-4065. He is the superintendent of Cowpens National Battlefield and the 96th National Historic Site. You know, John, it's been great having you out here. I hope you'll keep us in the loop so we can keep promoting what's going on out there.
Thank you so much, yeah. And anytime, if you want me to come out, and I'll gladly do that. And come out to the park and check it out.
Absolutely.
You bet.
We'll be doing that. Hey, you betcha. Now, where are you from?
Y'all.
Yeah. All right. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Bye-bye, everybody.